Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. Listen to this and think of it as a memo to the international community.
United Nations to see what happened in Libya, please.
You need the United Nations to help you. What do you want them to do?
Here in Libya, the people don't have any gun, anything don't have. Gaddafi killed everybody here in Libya. Please, send this report, please.
That's the voice of a Libyan fighter on Sky TV over the weekend. Intervention in Libya may seem like an open and shut case on humanitarian grounds. But I'm wondering, you know, if the same voice had emerged on global news reports calling for intervention in Iraq back in the 1990s, would the international community have responded?
Well,
in the 90s.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there were such voices, but in fact, it took the invasion of Kuwait.
Well, we had a no-fly zone for 12 years.
Well, that was after an invasion.
After Kuwait, yeah.
After Iraq invaded Kuwait, and then the international community pushed back. And then, of course, 9/11 put the international community decidedly into intervention mode in Iraq. But that produced a decidedly mixed result, and people are rethinking whether the Iraq intervention was appropriate on humanitarian grounds or even on the
people
grounds
don't
of
question Bosnia,
weapons of mass
though.
Disruption. Well, there were questions at the time when the air strikes took place in Serbia. And there was no international reaction to the Rwandan genocide.
Good point.
None whatsoever. Intense international involvement in the bloody political standoff in Little Ivory Coast has accomplished nothing.
Really?
Almost over the same period as we've been experiencing this awakening in the Middle East. So can there be a consistent standard for international intervention? Here's Democratic Senator Jim Webb of Virginia, a member of the Foreign Relations and Armed Services Committees.
We all know that military commitments, however small, are easily begun, and in this region particularly very difficult to end. History shows that. This is a region full of surprises, and I, for one, am of the opinion it's not a good idea to give weapons and military support to people who you don't know.
Do we know the Libyans well enough to have given them enough military support or at least a diplomatic support? There's actually those pictures of the son of Colonel Gaddafi with Hillary Clinton in the White House that have been playing all over this week. Joining us this morning is Karn Ross, former British diplomat and founder of the nonprofit diplomatic advisory group called Independent Diplomat. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So with the burdens of recent history, and we can go back as far as the 90s intervention in Serbia over Kosovo, but particularly the interventions in Iraq and Afghanistan, does it constrain the international community in thinking about the difficulties of intervening to support the opposition in Libya?
I think it does. I think history plays very heavily on the minds of countries, particularly recent history, as they consider military intervention in this case. I think the intervention in Iraq is most on people's minds. Unfortunately, the successful intervention in Kosovo is less mentioned in this context, where a military intervention by NATO from the air was extremely important in stopping the oppression of the Kosovo people. But Iraq, I think, has really coloured things, particularly at the UN Security Council, where there is still, and more broadly, general pretty great scepticism about Western motives when we talk about military intervention, particularly in the Middle East.
Well, the inconsistency certainly creates the motive question, but I'm wondering if Somalia isn't an example here. You've got Libya divided now, ostensibly into the East and West. Opposition holds Benghazi, and Colonel Gaddafi holds everything else. Intervention, and there was a lot of it in Somalia, didn't help the situation there of knitting that country back together.
No, it did not. It was pretty disastrous. A lot of Somalis and some Americans were killed. I think the best that can be said about military intervention is its consequences are highly uncertain. And I think that's probably true of Libya as well, though I think it should remain on the table. I also think that there are nonviolent options that the international community could pursue in advance of any military involvement that would put coercive pressure on the Libyan regime to stop killing its own people and to initiate democratic reform. Unfortunately, these kinds of measures not really being talked about at the moment.
Well, Karn Ross, this U.S. Senator John McCain has said that the American people simply don't have the stomach to watch the Libyan people get slaughtered by Gaddafi. But I'm wondering, is that the biggest argument in favor of intervention, is to save civilian lives there? Or is it, stability in the region?
I think saving civilian lives is a pretty good argument. I think it's probably the most important argument. One should always direct oneself to where there is the most suffering and try to end it. But I'm not sure I agree with John McCain that Western military intervention would necessarily have the guaranteed result of ending it. Gaddafi has said very clearly that he would treat this as an attack on Libya. It would involve, Defense Secretary Gates has said, a major attack on Libyan air defenses to begin with, and would therefore involve casualties, including probably, as is often the case, civilian casualties. Are we ready to look at children, civilians killed by American bombs in Libya? That would have an enormous propaganda value for Gaddafi. Are we ready to give him that tool? What would be the consequence of that tool? I think it's very easy to give ourselves moral authority and say we should stop harm against civilians. That's absolutely correct. But what is the best method to achieve that? And I think nonviolent methods should be given a chance first.
Well, Karen Ross, let's talk about that for a moment before we go. I mean, it seems to me that one of the frustrations that people have is that intervention usually involves one small set of tactics and very rarely involves a huge international consensus that would tighten the screws on many, many channels at once, including the nonviolent ones. What would you suggest?
Well, there has been consensus at the UN so far, a very welcome and unusual consensus. And I think there are still measures that could be taken, including stopping payments to the Libyan government, stopping purchasing oil, isolating the regime with a flight ban and transport ban into and from Libya. These measures have been tried before in Libya and in other contexts.
A full embargo, a full sea embargo?
I don't think it's necessarily a full sea embargo. You just want to stop Libya getting money. It's still getting a lot of money. An escrow account could be set up into which payments for oil should be made. Those payments should be made available for humanitarian purposes and given to a new democratic dispensation in Libya.
Is there a way of opening the channel so that the finances very visibly go to people in Benghazi, assuming we could establish credibility?
I think that would be a great idea, and I think we should export oil from the rebel-held areas. We should make clear that we support the rebels politically, economically, with aid, and that the Gaddafi regime will remain isolated forever. Get political declarations to that effect that nobody will ever do business with them again.
Karen Ross, thanks so much. Former British diplomat and founder of a nonprofit advisory group, Independent Diplomat.